Mina Kimes, former investigative reporter for Bloomberg and business writer for Fortune magazine, which in itself, Tim, reads very impressively. But then, of great interest to us, she joined ESPN, the magazine, in 2014. She's now host of the ESPN Daily podcast, radio host, TV commentator for ESPN. Her name is Mina Kimes, and she joined us. Good morning, Mina.
Good morning. Well, good afternoon here, but good morning to you guys.
It is indeed. This is a very, very impressive resume that I have looking at the moment. What interests me greatly, how do you go from being an investigative reporter for Bloomberg and then jumping into the ESPN world?
I spent 5 years at ESPN. By the way, I just opened your Twitter avatar, and I see you're both shirtless in the picture, which just to kind of have a visual of who I'm talking to, so I'm glad I did that. that's really what it's all about, getting on the show, too. I've been at ESPN for about 5 years, covering primarily the NFL, but I really do all sports. Our podcast, ESPN Daily, covers the gamut. I mean, we do everything. We do NFL, NBA, baseball, but we've done a UFC story, hockey. Maybe you can help us out, do some rugby at some point. We try to cover it all.
Hey, Mina, where did your love of sports come from?
Oh, like a lot of young girls, my dad. I was born into an NFL family, so I grew up watching American football, and I didn't play it, but I was always a rabid fan. Even when I was a business journalist, I spent pretty much all my free time watching football on football message boards, trying not to find anything that I wrote back then. And then, so when I got the opportunity to do it for a living, I just couldn't pass it up.
I actually read the article that you wrote about your dad and Russell Wilson, and it's a great article about a child's connection with their father and how you're reconnected through sports and that type of thing. And he seems to have been such a great figure and influence in your life, and particularly your love of sport and the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, thanks for reading that. That's so nice of you. It's a blessing and a curse, right? Because I was watching my beloved Seattle Seahawks on Monday, and of course they always seem to have these really painful nail biters, and I'm about to puke and doing crazy stuff like walking into another room for the field goals, changing jerseys 6 times, and it occurs to me I really have a sickness. So thanks, Dad.
in the world of, say, being the investigative journalist in the business world, and then you step into the sporting world, and yesterday, in preparation for this, I reread the Aaron Rodgers interview that you did. Can you give us some idea? Aaron Rodgers, this is not necessarily a massive NFL country here in Australia. People know the NFL, but he's sort of like one of the greatest sports stars in America. How long does it take for you to track him down and organize an interview with somebody like an Aaron Rodgers?
Well, first of all, good heavens, you have done more preparation for this than just about any radio program I've gone on years. So thank you so much for reading that. I'm deeply flattered. In addition to doing the radio, the podcast, occasionally I write these magazine profiles of NFL players, and they can take a really long time because they're really busy. You usually end up spending time with them in the summer here when they're free. And Rodgers in particular took a long time to set up because he hasn't done a long form interview in 6 years. So I actually wrote him a letter. I remember explaining why I wanted to do the interview, why I thought he should do it. And then several months went by. And then one day his agent said, yep, he'll do it next week. And then the night before, his agent put me in touch with him and they said, yep, he's going to come to your house. So I ended up spending a very frantic night cleaning my house for Aaron Rodgers to come over. Trying to hide all of my Seahawks paraphernalia. they do take quite some time to get in motion.
And Mina, is it true that when you sat down and you put your recorder on the table, to, as all journalists and reporters do, he then turned around and grabbed his phone or recorder and said, do you mind if I also record this interview?
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned that in the story, guys, is because it's pretty unusual. Most players don't really care like that, and I think it kind of speaks to his level of privacy. Probably kind of explains why he hasn't done an interview and hadn't done one in 6 or 7 years before then, because he was kind of distrustful, I suppose, of the media.
Are most athletes, and you do a lot of interviews, and you can, for anybody listening to this right now, you can access those through ESPN. They're great. They're long-form type interviews. You do a lot of, obviously, background work before you interview these people. Are they all suspicious, these athletes? Are they all difficult to sit down and talk through and actually fold back the layers so you really get to know the person?
They're all so different, right? They're just like everyone else. Some guys are really talkative and have big personalities. Some guys take a really long time to open up. I mean, just thinking through some of the NFL stars have written about, and it's not just NFL. Like last year, for example, I did a story on Luka Doncic. I don't know if you guys follow NBA very closely, but I went to Madrid to write that. It was before he was drafted, and he very much just seemed like a teenager. He was 19 at the time. He's kind of goofy and a little quiet. And then sometimes you get a guy like this summer I did a story on Baker Mayfield with the Browns, went to Cleveland, and, you know, he was very chatty. So it really, really is quite a mix.
What's your technique when you're interviewing people?
You know, a lot of preparation. So I usually go into an interview having read everything, all the interviews that the athlete has already done, in part not just because I'd like to, you know a lot about their story, but also what they haven't talked about and what they might be interested in talking about. And that was certainly the case with Rodgers.
We're speaking with Mina Kimes, who is the ESPN superstar. What about the glass ceiling? It doesn't appear to be the case in America now. We see so many female sports journalists particularly doing great things and hosting programs. We watch as much as we can here in Australia. There's a really strong presence, and it's getting that way here in Australia, but that wasn't always the case, Mina. So how do you find that? I mean, in the wokey world, if you like, from the outside, there does appear to be a bit of a changing of the guard, which is a good thing.
You know, it's happening, but it's still pretty slow, right? I mean, a lot of the things I do here in the U.S. Have not really been done by women, and I'm not trying to sound self-aggrandizing. It just kind of speaks to how few women we have in the industry. Like last summer, I did color commentary for Rams preseason games, and it didn't really occur to me until I started preparing for it to do it that actually women had not done color commentary for NFL games on TV up till that point. So it's kind of like a baby steps thing, but we certainly—it's certainly a lot better than it was even just a few years ago. I'll say that.
How'd you find that, stepping into the commentary box and doing that?
Terrifying, absolutely terrifying. The good news is it was NFL preseason, and the Rams in particular don't play any of their starters during the preseason, so that made it a little bit easier just because it was a somewhat smaller audience. But it's definitely different from radio. I'm sure you guys know, TV, there's a rush that comes with it, right? Because it's almost like you feel like an athlete. It's like kind of gearing up for the game, and it's live, and that can be very fun.
There's a real different attitude over there in the States between, say, the NBA and the way that the players conduct themselves. They're allowed to speak more freely on social issues as opposed to the NFL. What's your view on how much those sports people give in terms of the NBA players compared to the NFL players? And do you think they've headed down the right track, the NBA, in the way that they conduct themselves?
I do, for the most part. You know, you're absolutely right. NBA players in the U.S. tend to be more outspoken. I would say the biggest difference, too, is the ownership, coaches, executives are also more outspoken. They tend to be more progressive in their politics. And I would also say the fans tend to, it's a different demographic, and I think that enables it from a business perspective in the eyes of owners versus the NFL in America. I will add, though, that, you know, before the NBA season, there was a massive story here with the Houston Rockets GM, Daryl Morey, tweeting support for Hong Kong, and that blew up into a really big story because a lot of NBA players and coaches declined to comment on that, his tweets, and the NBA said they supported his right to free speech, but I think it struck people as a moment in which, you know, the outspokenness and kind of commitment to social justice seem to be challenged for the NBA for the first time.
Hey, Mina, can you, understandably, we're all heavily invested in Ben Simmons's career with Philadelphia, and we, you know, all of Australia watching very, very closely. And it would appear that, it, you know, in the space of a short period of time of this season, that again the knives have come for him to some degree. Can you give us your take on where Ben Simmons sits in the landscape of NBA basketball and how you rate him?
Well, I just think he's a fascinating player, right? I mean, we actually, the podcast I do, ESPN Daily, we did a whole episode on him. And, you know, how everyone is obsessed with his shooting or his lack of shooting, to be more specific, especially this summer when he made that three for the first time in NBA play and everyone went nuts. It's an amazing story, I think, because he's so good at everything else. He's been so good at everything else. He's kind of like the perfect basketball player with this one flaw. And I think that's fascinating because, you know, his team really ought to be a favorite to go to the finals this year, the Sixers. And if he's able to even improve in that area, shooting from distance for a bit, it would be so massive for them. But you know, he's a quiet guy, quiet personality, a bit of an introvert. And I find that interesting as well because, you know, his teammates with Joel Embiid is really the opposite of that in every way. And I kind of enjoy seeing them interact.
Hey, man, do you think journalists start to barrack for a story? We talk about it often on our radio program here about the pile-on, you know, when something starts and somebody writes something and then everybody starts to think, okay, that's a good angle. People pile onto that story. Do you think that exists in journalism over there in the States as well?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there are just certain sports stories here that really capture everyone's interest because often they're touching on something that has nothing to do with sports, whether it's politics or culture. And I think it's really amplified by social media. You know, in the U.S., the trending topics on most days. Well, I would say we've got some things going on in Washington, D.C. that do capture people's attention right now. But beyond that, at night, a lot of the times, it is sports, right? And you really see that sort of conversation happening outside of media then going on to drive what we talk about the next day on our airwaves or on TV and often what we write about as well.
I mean, you were an investigative journalist in business for about 5 or 6 years. Now you've been in sports for probably the same amount of time, if not longer. Is there more integrity in sports than there is in business in America, do you think?
Question, Wisp.
I think it's equally divided, you know. It's harder than ever, I think, to fund investigative journalism in sports or in business. I think we've got some great outlets in the U.S. ProPublica, for example. They do a fantastic job doing business. And I think at ESPN, we have our Outside the Lines team does really, really terrific work on that front. And we've just got, you know, dozens of writers and reporters chasing stories about the leagues and teams as well. But I think in both industries, kind of to go back to what I was saying about how sometimes the social conversation drives topics, it can be hard for some of the better reporting and some of the better stories to kind of rise above the din of that conversation.
Hey, Mina, it's been great to talk to you. Just as we let you go, you got a lot of love over here, a lot of support and fans. We're getting a lot of feedback as we talk to you, which is great. Who is the one in interview that you'd love to be able to conduct that you haven't quite been able to nail yet? Is there someone that you've sort of got in your sights but haven't been able to get there?
Well, I'll try this out because he's in the news this week. Colin Kaepernick is pretty much every sports writer's dream interview at this point, and I'm sure you guys have seen the news that the NFL invited him to work out in front of 32 teams this Saturday in Atlanta. Obviously, he has not played for 3 years now after settling with the NFL after over his lawsuit, accusing him of colluding to keep him out because of his protest of police brutality and racial injustice. It's a fascinating story, but he also has been, you know, a lot of other people have spoken for him. And I think I and a lot of other people who are interested in this story and do believe he's been shunned from the league really want to hear from him. So I would love to be the person who hears that from him.
We're backing you to get that interview, and we'll replay it in full on our radio station, Mina. Thanks so much for giving us some time this morning. It's great to talk to you.
It was nice to meet you guys.
test squad was announced yesterday for the first two tests against Pakistan. There's always great debate when it gets announced for the first tests of the summer, and we need to debate it with someone that knows what he's talking about, and no one more qualified than this man. Former national talent manager, national selector, Australian Hall of Fame inductee, best batsman of the modern era. His name, Gregory Stephen Chappell. He joins us on the line. Welcome, Greg.
Morning, Gary. How are you?
Very nice to talk to you. Tim Watson in here, also a great cricket aficionado. We are keen to pick your brain on this test side. Do you like it?
Well, good luck with that.
What's left?
It's pretty much as expected. There are probably one or two names, other names that would have got a lot of discussion, could have gone either way. So nobody's really knocked the door down to force their way into the side. So the selectors had to make a call, which often they have to do, and that's the way they've gone. Look, yeah, it's a good side. It's a very good bowling side. Batting, obviously, there are some question marks about, but invariably, as we found in the Ashes, somebody puts their hand up.
Who is, and I don't say disappoints because that sounds harsh, but who hasn't lived up to your expectation? Is it Usman Khawaja, who, you know, at various stages throughout his career has looked capable of being our best test batsman? Who is it that hasn't fulfilled your sort of expectations?
Well, I think, you know, I understand just how hard it is to perform at that level. There's a very big gap between first-class cricket and international cricket. It's a huge step up for anyone, but particularly so for batsmen, because it's such a harsh, exploit. You know, Donald Bradman batted 83 times in test cricket and only made 2,900. So he failed 54 times on that basis. There's a lot of failure involved in it, and it's very challenging and demanding. And, you know, Uzi's had plenty of opportunities. There are others that have had opportunities. I think we've got to be realistic and accept that, you know, apart from Smith, Warner, albeit, you know, had an ordinary Ashes series, and Manus Labuschagne, who's showing some really good signs, the rest of the guys have proven that they're really good first-class cricketers, but they haven't quite made the step up.
And I guess then you look at it and you go, you talk about those pressures, and you see what's happening from a domestic point of view, particularly here in Victoria, with three super talented players who at various stages could all have claims to being in the Australian Test team, in Maddison and Pekowski and Maxwell taking a break due to mental health. So does that... It wouldn't surprise you, I would imagine, given your background and your work that you've done with these young talent coming through?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. We see it in all fields, particularly in the sporting field. A lot of the spotlight's right on them. They're under the glare of that, for, you know, in the cricket sense. You know, 10 months of the year, these guys are on the road. It is very demanding, and they're away from their... support mechanisms, their family, their friends, their coaches and so on. And if things aren't going well, they've got a lot of time to dwell on it, and that can't be healthy. And I know cricket does a lot around that to try and help these guys, but obviously from time to time it gets to them, and it really is hard. I don't have the answer, and I'm not sure too many people do have the answer, but somehow we've got to find a way to help these guys get through. And I'm glad that it's out in the open and players feel comfortable to talk about it, and it's not held against them, which is even more important. So a really tough one. I mean, they are three really talented young cricketers, and at the moment all three of them are struggling. So it tells us something. I'm not quite sure what it's telling us, but we need to explore it further.
Hey, Greg, when you played, and you know, we're going back a little bit in time now, but
come on, Tim.
I just said a little bit in time, Greg, not too far
okay,
back.
Okay, mate.
that downtime, though, you talked about, you know, the three forms of cricket that they play now, 10 months, 11 months of the year, whatever it might be. That downtime that you experienced as a cricketer, how important was that, did you think, to your all-round well-being?
Oh, very important. And, you know, you had to find a way to deal with it. You know, some people were quite happy on their own, you know, in their own company for long periods. But, you know, fortunately in a team environment, there are plenty of other guys around. You know, we relied on each other a lot. It was a very different era, though. You know, there wasn't the glare of publicity. There weren't mobile phones everywhere. We could get away from time to time and just go out and have a few quiet beers or a meal somewhere and just forget that you were international cricketers for a while. I'm not sure that happens quite so much, and I'm not quite sure that you know, they're quite as comfortable with each other. I'm not suggesting that there's any issues there, but I just think it's a different era. You know, we were part-time cricketers. It wasn't our living. We had a real job and we played cricket for fun. I think it was a lot easier to be able to deal with that because we could just walk away and, you know, go and have a quiet night out and, you know, be left alone and not have people pointing fingers and saying, what are you doing? Have a couple of beers in the middle of a test match or before a test match. They don't have that luxury. So they tend to stay in the hotel. They are forced into each other's company, and not every team is totally comfortable with each other. The beauty of having a large team is that you had a few mates that you knew you could go and relax with. You know, I don't know that that's quite as readily available.
Just looking at the headline in the paper this morning, Khawaja at crossroads, he's been left out of the 14-man squad. If he was to give you a call today, Greg, and ask you for some advice, what would you say to him?
Well, I mean, all he can do is keep striving, keep making runs. I suppose the same message has gone to Usman for as long as I can remember, is that, you know, it's not only about making runs. It's, you know, about fielding. It's about a whole range of issues. And, you know, he probably just hasn't quite nailed it. We know he's a very, very good player, particularly at the domestic level, and he's shown signs at the international level. But, you know, when it's really counted in recent times, he just hasn't quite been able to make that step. You know, there's not a lot of it in that regard. He knows. He's had all the coaches. He knows what it is that he's got to do. He's just got to go and do it.
Is it possible then that selectors, given what you've just said, and, you know, he's had this instruction over a long period of time and he's been told what he needs to do, how he needs to go about it, and they've overlooked him this time. Is it possible in the minds of selectors now they've actually moved past him?
I don't know that they've moved past him permanently, but, you know, they're certainly for the moment they've moved past him, and they probably want to see some different actions from him in the future. But I'm not quite sure what age he is, but, you know, he's in his 30s. Yep. It comes a time where selectors have got to weigh up the benefits of the investment. Do you keep investing in someone who's, you know, at the fag end of their career, or do you look towards someone who's, if they succeed, has got longer?
To witness the David Boone testimonial in Tasmania many years ago, you and Gary batting together on a pitch described as a minefield, you put on over 50 together as a partnership. What do you remember about that day?
I remember what a very good partnership it was, and what great rapport we had. You know, Gary could have easily done something with his cricket. You know, I'm disappointed he wasted it on football, really.
You don't know how nervous I was waiting for that answer, Greg. You absolutely nailed it. Great to talk to you. We look forward to this test, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Nice to talk to you, boys. All great. The best.